Hi everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann, India's first podcast that focuses on the growth stories of a startup. I'm your host, Ankur Variku, and today I cannot be more excited to welcome our guest. He is someone who is a mentor, a role model to startups, but inarguably is also the representation and the brand ambassador of the Indian internet system and story. It's my absolute privilege to speak to Sanjeev Bhikchandani today, the co-founder of InfoEdge and the man behind the Naukri.com story and so many other startups that he has built over these decades. This episode will focus on what is it that entrepreneurs need to think of when they think of an exit, whether it's an IPO or something else, how to build a startup from when you've established a product market fit to a growth stage, and whether bootstrapping or fundraising is the way to go and what is the difference. Thank you so much, Sanjeev, for being part of us and this show. It's a pleasure to have you, and thanks for spending time with us. I wanted to specifically spend time with you today on your ideology of how to raise funding, or what you've gone on record saying that bootstrapping is still the best way to build a business. Do you still think that given the entire competition that's happened in the country, new international players coming in, do you still stick by the fact that bootstrapping remains the best way to build a business?
I do. In fact, I'll go a little further than that. I'll say the customer's money is better than the investor's money.
That's a good way of putting it.
The reason is that if you're getting the customer's money, and you're getting it repeatedly, yeah, and you're getting it at a price which is higher than your cost, yeah, it means you have proof of concept. You, yes, have a viable product, yes, possibly viable business, yeah, because the customer is unforgiving. Yes. He's not going to do you a favor.
Yeah.
And a little scarcity of money also helps you think harder, work harder, and make things work better.
And also,
if you look at some of the biggest and best companies in the world, many of them did not raise venture capital, actually.
Yes. At least not as early as it's happening nowadays.
Or not as much as it's happening now.
Definitely not as much. And do you see that this approach is different for different verticals or different industries? For instance, Naukri was a true blue sales or advertising-led business model, while there may be an e-commerce-led business model, there may be a media-led business model. Is the approach slightly different towards how capital is used there?
Definitely, some verticals and some companies will be more capital consumptive.
Yeah.
Definitely, you'll be influenced by competition. If competition, then lots of money.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? But when you get lots of money, you also have the luxury of perhaps not innovating enough.
Yes.
And just doing it with money.
Yeah.
And in the long run, how viable will your business be remains to be seen.
Got it. Was an IPO in your mind when you started something like a Naukri?
The IPO first entered our mind when we raised our Series A. So we bootstrapped for 3 years.
Okay.
And that time we didn't know what venture capital was even. We were just trying to build, yeah, a small profitable business. And we raised venture capital. And I read the shareholder agreement for the first time.
Yeah.
And it mentioned that, you know, we need an IPO or some other exit, you know, in so many years.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, I began to think, okay, we'd have to, you know, we're doing this for the long run,
yeah,
long haul, so we're not going to sell this,
sure,
to anybody else. And if the investor needs an exit, the only viable exit will be an IPO.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it took us 6.5 years to get there from that moment. But, yeah, we thought about it for 6 years.
Wow. And did things change dramatically, or was it something on expected lines when you did IPO?
So I think we had plenty of prep work and talks.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking to people, bankers, lawyers, others who've gone public. You know, we got on, we restructured the board a year and a half before the IPO, so we got on a large number of senior independent directors. Our investors are talking to us all the time. So we knew life would change.
Mm.
And we knew we had to prepare for it before the IPO.
Sure.
So it actually took us about, from the time we began to actually discuss the IPO seriously and meet bankers in February 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And we went public in October 2006. So we had 18 months.
Yeah.
During those 18 months, we had to, you know, staff up. We had to change, you know, work on all our processes. I remember we had to do 3 statutory audits in 9 months before we went public, because the clearances would keep getting delayed because the market was choppy.
Got it.
Right? And by the time you got your clearance, then, you know, one more quarter had passed, you'd do an audit again.
Sure.
So we had to do all of that, right?
Wow.
And so we was sort of had to jump through many, many hoops to actually go public. But,
yeah,
but it was a huge learning experience.
And in today's market, Sanjeev, where there is a fairly good depth of private capital coming in, your general advice to entrepreneurs or founders, should they remain private as as much as they can, or is there warrant of benefits becoming a public company?
So if I were to do it again, I would still go public.
Okay.
We would still go public. I would still favor that.
Sure.
And the reason is that, look, going public puts you in a different strategic space.
Hmm.
It gives a stock currency, it gives an ease of value,
yeah.
It enables everyone to, you know, partake in the wealth creation.
Yeah.
Okay? It sort of makes you sort of unacquirable,
mm-hmm.
so you can remain independent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are many, many benefits of going public.
Got it.
Yes, there are responsibilities. Yes, you're under a microscope. Yes, there are compliances.
Yeah.
Yes, there's regulation.
Mm-hmm.
But you deal with that.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Any frameworks that you think are helpful in preparing yourself for, mentally preparing yourself for an
idea? I think it's useful to talk to people who've gone public.
Yeah.
It's useful to talk to people who've who've helped others go public.
Mm-hmm.
It's useful to talk to, let's say, a CFO of some company that's public.
Yeah.
That what does life involve?
Yeah. That's true.
And when you went public, what happened?
That's true.
And you get lots of good advice.
Right. So, yeah.
Because usually people are willing to talk and help others.
Hmm. When InfoEdge was deciding to go public, was there a discussion about whether you should go public in India or outside?
Yes, there was initially. So we first began to talk about going public in February 2005.
Yeah.
And at that time, we could either do NASDAQ or India.
Yeah.
Now, NASDAQ, you usually, the belief is that you'll get a higher valuation.
Yeah.
Okay. We, however, as founders and promoters, we were more comfortable in India.
Mm-hmm.
Several reasons.
Sure.
You know, your brand is known in India.
Yeah.
You know the Indian landscape and environment. It's easier to service investors if you're listed in India. Right. But look, valuation is a consideration. Now, we were debating, and we kept on debating. And then the government took the decision out of our hands, because in June or July 2005, the government passed a ruling which said that a company cannot go public overseas without going public in India.
Oh.
Which means you could, you know, so that effectively took the decision for us, and we were quite happy with that.
Got it. Yeah.
Right. Of course, there are ways you can still go public overseas. Yes. You can flip to Mauritius, and then you can, you know, but
yeah.
we're not into that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Right. Now it's allowed again.
Mm.
Okay. And look, while overseas is an option,
mm-hmm.
you've got to understand that the regulatory, the compliances, the cost of servicing a listing, you know, the chances of it becoming an under-researched orphan stock,
mm.
you know, there are all those risks.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're running a great company, it's fine. Right. But yes, the valuation will be higher. Mm. So I would say NASDAQ is probably more brutal, you know, as a market, because it'll give you a much higher valuation on the upside.
Mm.
It'll hammer your stock a lot more on the downside.
Got it.
The Indian market will average you out.
Got it.
So if you're chasing a higher valuation, NASDAQ is better. If you're chasing, what we are chasing is that, look, we are an Indian company.
Mm.
We would prefer to be listed in India. And we're happy complying with Indian laws.
Yeah. So Sally wanted to spend some time on taking a company IPO. While it may be seemingly a very far out journey, but when someone thinks as an entrepreneur or founder of, hey, I could potentially be IPOing, are there things that they need to prepare for mentally much in advance?
Look, I think, first of all, an IPO is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Going public is a great thing,
yeah.
if your company is ready for it.
Okay.
Right. If your company is not ready for it and you take your company public, it could be not so good news.
Yeah.
Okay, because an IPO is forever.
Yeah.
Okay, a listing is forever.
That's true.
And a listing has to be serviced. Investors have to get a return.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Which means that you should be of a certain size and scale.
Yeah.
And a certain rate of profit, a certain rate of growth.
Yeah.
With enough visibility that this will continue to happen in the foreseeable future.
True.
Which is when you can go public.
Yeah.
As one of the options.
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
And this, you know, what is the size, what is the kind of profit, and what is the kind of growth that makes it a good company to go public?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on when.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, we were told in 2006 or 2005 that, listen, if you're 100 crores as an internet company turnover,
mm-hmm.
and you're making a 15-20% profit, you're a good candidate to go public.
Okay.
Right? that number will be different now. The market is different. It's 13 years out. It's probably 200-400 crores.
Yeah.
I don't know what it'll be, but the bankers will tell you.
Sure.
You know. So go public. If it's right for you to go public.
Hmm.
If it's wrong for you to go public, don't go public.
Don't go public.
Why do you think, Sanjeev, India has not seen as many tech IPOs, and even till today?
So I think IT services using lots of IPOs.
Yes, of course.
I think internet companies, they are much, much fewer. Mm-hmm. So there is Make My Trip listed in the US.
Yeah.
There is Rediff listed long, long back.
Yeah.
Sify, you know, listed long back. And in India, there's InfoEdge, there's Just Dial, you know, there's now Matrimony.
Yeah.
And there are one or two other much, much smaller companies.
Yeah.
But there aren't that many. And I think that's because you haven't got scale and profit.
Hmm. Got it. So it's just pure reflection of just
market size.
Yeah. Are there contenders that you would love to see go public or?
No, I do think there are companies now that are emerging which are of size and scale where they can go public in the next 2-3 years.
Got it.
Whether they choose to go public or not remains to be seen.
Of course.
Because right now, as you said, that private markets are flush with enough cash that they can afford, they can cut those kind of check sizes that
can continue to make them private.
Yeah.
Got it. Your personal advice to founders, is it better to start with true blue innovative first gen products that have perhaps never been attempted before, or is it a better idea in India to build on businesses that have already been proven successful outside and just replicate that success here?
So look, in my view, you should be solving an unsolved problem for the consumer.
Got it.
Right? Now, if that results in a business which is similar to one built outside, so be it. But that's not where you got your inspiration from.
Sure.
Your inspiration has to come from knowing, observing, watching, talking to customers.
Hmm.
Your idea has to come from there.
Got it.
Right? Okay. And very often, you'll come out with solutions that have not been done overseas, which is fine.
Yeah.
As long as you're solving a customer's problem. So so it's about customer, not competition. It's about customer, not overseas benchmarks.
Got it.
Okay. One big difference that you see in today's entrepreneurs from, let's say, your generation?
I think a lot smarter.
Really?
Yeah, much smarter.
Okay.
I think a very large number of high-quality people coming in.
Uh-huh.
Right? I think entrepreneurship has gone somewhat mainstream as a career aspiration.
That's true.
I finished from business school in 89. In my class, if you ask people how many of you would want to be entrepreneurs, maybe 5-7 times would have gone up. Today, when I go to speak at an IIM or an IIT, it's how many of you would like to be running your own company maybe in the next 5 years, 10 years, maybe 40-50% hands go up.
Yeah.
I think it's become socially acceptable.
Yeah.
I think parents don't mind, you know. So look, there's a new kind of entrepreneur today.
Sure.
So there were entrepreneurs by caste.
Uh-huh.
There were entrepreneurs by inheritance.
Yeah.
There were entrepreneurs, you know, because they couldn't get a good job.
Sure.
But today you have middle class, educated, qualified entrepreneurs by choice.
By choice.
So it's a different kind of entrepreneur who's coming today.
Absolutely.
And these guys are all founding these new age companies.
Yeah.
Doing innovative stuff.
Yeah.
And these are the people whom investors very often back.
Got it.
So there's a different class of entrepreneur, and I think that's in the long run, that's only good for India.
Yes. And anything that you feel that today's generation of entrepreneurs do not have which you wish they did?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to be a very good people's person.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to be a little patient.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to be a little frugal, personally, and a little capital efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a good idea to focus on the customer.
Got it. Which I will always reckon. Great. On that note, Sanjeev, thank you so much for spending time with us. It's been a pleasure. I love the honesty and the forthcomingness. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And with that, we've come to the closure of yet another episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann. My conversation today with Sanjeev taught me a lot. It, of course, was extremely honest, which is what I expected from the man. But it also told us the significance and the importance of being frugal, thinking of your startup in a bootstrapping manner and not always pegging itself on fundraising, and so much more. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and I hope that you join us again in the next episode of Building It Up with Bertelsmann. Please do remember to subscribe so that you're made aware of all the future episodes as and when they show up. And I hope all of you have a great day ahead. Thank you.